It's Rufus and Frank are.
I still haven't seen it because you wouldn't pull it out around the kids.
It's all taped up right now.
Is that what this?
Oh, your tattoo.
You had something kind of lingering down your sleeve too.
I got athletic tape all up on me.
Oh wow, you got a lot of ink.
Oh
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm a
addicted.
No, I wouldn't go that far, but I certainly, you know, I got my fair share of tattoos.
Very cool.
Because I keep seeing things kind of like a sleeve would move. Like, hey, there's a little bit.
There it is. Oh,
but it's really, I was wondering what the athletic tape was.
That's
just
what
like,
I do in the bar.
You have this weird thing.
You show this little, oh, hello.
Yeah, what is the athletic tape
hey,
for?
How's it go?
Oh, hey. Well, the athletic tape is actually a company called, I'm gonna do a pitch right now. Here we go.
Go for it.
Look at me go. It's a company called Rock Tape, which is a phenomenal company. They do a whole lot of athletic taping. And I head up to ETS Gym, which is where I train. And there's a girl up there by the name of Jill McGee, who is phenomenal at what she does. And so what she does is she like realigns my muscles, gets them all back in place, gets my hips back in center. Today we had to fix my whole shoulder was rotated forward.
Huh.
So in a 30-minute session, we kind of rotated it back into its place, and then the tape basically kind of holds it there until the body can accept it. But like it's little things that like you look at it and you wouldn't think that that does a whole lot. But it's unbelievable, the outcome, especially from someone, you know, I train 6 days a week. You know, obviously I've been playing football the majority of my life. And so going up there has been unbelievable. And, you know, you can really feel the difference. And it's really catching on, too. Like I was watching Wimbledon a couple weeks ago, and a whole lot of the tennis players were all taped up. Huh. You know, they had the tape.
Is it like an aggressive massage? Because that's what's making it sound like.
It's painful. It is painful, but it's one of those things that's painful while it's happening, and then as soon as it's done, you know, you walk up and you instantly feel better.
It's how you expect to feel leaving, like, a chiropractor.
Kind of, yeah. Huh. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, she'll push the muscles back into place, and then it'll lock it in, and blood flow will flow there, like you almost got an injury there.
Yeah.
And then that'll help heal the whole place, and I'll be, you know, by the time I wake up tomorrow, I won't be sore at all or anything, and then the tape will come off in about 24 hours or something.
It does sound similar to, like, a chiropractic visit, except... Yep. A little
very focused,
a little slower, I think, probably in the progress because you know, chiropractor, it's just like snap, it's there, and you feel it after. But it sounds like you feel it while she's
it's
pushing
like
the muscle back,
it's the deepest of the deep tissue massages.
Okay,
it's
well, even
fantastic.
Even with the chiropractor, I mean, there's only so much they can adjust, the body still has to like the muscles still have to get into place when they do an adjustment like that, too.
Yeah, it's just it's a faster, the actual motion of it sounds like it's faster than,
Yeah, that's true.
And the aftermath, too. I mean, it's the same way with the chiropractor. The blood is flowing to it like it's an injury. And they always say drink lots of water. It also releases toxins in your body. So the water's good.
Yeah.
And massages, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. You know, I go up there. I've seen her once every couple weeks. Sometimes more if I injure something or tweak something while working out. But usually it's once every couple weeks for just a 30-minute session and good to go.
Cool. Works wonders, huh?
It does, yeah. Good to go.
Very nice. Well, I wanted to say this earlier, but I just had to mention that my Star Wars drinking game rule was anytime there was a "that's what she said" joke, and during the Death Star battle, there are so many good ones. Look at the size of that thing. Or
look, you're not gonna get out of there in time.
No, it's Luke. At this speed, do you think we'll be able to pull out in time?
Oh dear. At this point,
yes.
I think I will shame myself a little
not
bit more
ruffle,
and
though.
Say that I haven't seen Star Wars in like 17 years.
Oh.
So I don't really remember it. I watched it with my dad. They were re-released in the theaters and we went to see the original three when they were re-released.
Is that the last time you saw them?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was. It's been...
That was like 97.
Yeah. Like I said, it's been like... 16-17 years. It's been a long time. I saw him as a little girl. I haven't seen him. I'll take more water.
Water?
Yeah.
I think I'm good.
I'll take another beer.
Another shandy?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Look at that. I already had one.
Yeah, I haven't
I
seen
mean,
him
water.
Since then. And I saw the prequels in high school mostly because I dated some geeks. And
tomato,
so,
tomato.
Tomato.
There you go.
Gosh.
There you go.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw the prequels in high school because I was dating some geeks, so I ended up seeing them. But
did you just think about the
currently? No, I didn't intend to. Although it applies, yeah. I didn't mean to. Well, I think there's only been one guy I've ever. Has there even been one? I wouldn't consider a geek. I don't know if I've ever dated anyone but geeks. But,
I'm a huge nerd.
Thank you. But yeah, I really need to revisit Star Wars because my geek cred is suffering a lot from having not seen them in a decade and a half and not getting references to them unless they're really obvious ones.
Wow.
I can say I haven't seen the Star Wars in a long time.
I will admit that I've had a hankering to watch Episode 1 that I keep coming back to it to the point of I know that in terms of the overall series, it's, you know, the first three aren't fantastic, but there are still some memories that you can kind of go back to. Like, I would like to see pod racing in HD. That would be kind of interesting to see. But that was the 3D, right? Yeah.
How was that?
I normally don't like 3D. It was a different style.
Still hate 3D.
Speaking of 3D, Finding Nemo in 3D is going to be unreal.
Oh, I can't wait.
I've seen Lion King.
I believe that.
My boyfriend is not crazy about 3D, but that preview came up when we went to see Brave, and I was like, honey, we're going to see this, right? Right? You'll see this with me? And he was like, yeah, okay.
How was Brave?
It's such a gorgeous movie to begin with.
Brave is good. Brave is...
It's not the best of Pixar,
but
it's not the worst of Pixar either. It's that happy medium of it's a good story, it's pretty... But it's
and I think it depends on who you are because really
is it Pixar or DreamWorks?
It's Pixar. Yeah,
and that's,
it
that's
looks a lot like How to Train Your
that.
Dragon, which is why I think people get confused.
You do like it?
It looks a lot like How to Train Your Dragon. I love How to Train Your Dragon, by the way. Right. Also, but yeah, it is a Pixar movie. I think the thing about it is, and it's not portrayed this way in the trailers. But Brave is a mother-daughter story.
Yes.
That is what it is. It is a story about this girl and her mother and their relationship. And so if that's not something you can connect with, it's not going to be a movie that you're going to love as much.
Yep.
But if it's something you can really connect with, it can be a really amazing movie for you. So it has a lot to do with your personal perspective, I think.
I mean, as soon as I heard Pixar, I instantly lost interest, though, unfortunately.
What?
If you put DreamWorks and Pixar movies next back to back for me, I think that unless you look at the classics, obviously, you know, you look at the Disney classics, you can't beat Aladdin. Let's be serious.
You'd take a Shark's Tale over Finding Nemo?
No, not necessarily. But
that walks that line.
I would say the only DreamWorks ones I really love. I actually really liked the original Shrek when it came out.
I like Shrek.
Yes.
The sequels, not as crazy about. But the first one. When I finally got around to seeing it, I really did like Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah, Kung Fu Panda
was really
phenomenal.
I hear the sequels are really good to that one. The sequel that's out was really good.
Right.
Yeah.
And I adore How to Train Your Dragon.
How to Train Your Dragon is really good. Did you ever see Puss in Boots?
I didn't.
Puss in Boots is fantastic.
Really? I heard mixed things on that
one. Here's the thing that DreamWorks tops Pixar with, is that they top them with their humor. DreamWorks does this thing where they have very, very adult humor, but they fit into a kid's movie, and all of their movies have them. You know, and like it's one of those things that like you kids will go and like they won't necessarily get some of the jokes, but then you watch it and Puss in Boots is full of it.
I imagine that also then has to do with your sense of humor, though. I mean, to be honest, I have a hard time sometimes going into movies that have a lot of adult humor that are geared toward kids, even if it will go over the kids' heads. As an educator, because I've worked in schools now for 4 years. As an educator, I have a really hard time shutting off my educator brain. So like I saw Rango. Which I really...
Oh, Rango was fantastic.
When I saw it a second time, I really loved it. But the first time I saw it, all I could think was that armadillo is basically chopped in half and talking, and this is a really disturbing image that they're showing to kids because this was... It's not a kid's movie, but it was it was promoted as a kid's movie.
Yeah.
The trailers were geared toward kids.
There were so many things in Rango.
See, and there were a lot of them. That's why I didn't enjoy Rango the first time I saw it. So I imagine Puss in Boots might be a similar kind of experience for me where I would be taken out of the movie by the things that are more adult.
Yeah.
Okay, so since we're on a Pixar-ish kind of topic, I found this on iTunes recently.
Whoa.
For blind viewers.
What?
Wow.
Interesting.
I am so tempted to... I mean, you can't rent it from iTunes. You can only buy it.
Yeah.
$15. I'm so tempted to just get like a blindfold
please
or like one of those sleep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know what? They're...
I assume it's just the movie preview itself, but if they're...
Maybe.
Is it the movie preview with blind viewers?
Let's find out.
Moulin Rouge has an audio track for the visually impaired as well on the DVD.
Yeah, there are some out
I've
there.
I've never listened to it.
Good afternoon.
Oh, yeah, it's just the preview.
Well, hold on.
No. Yeah, they wouldn't show that for blind people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just the normal preview for the movie.
Because
see, Cars I thought was terrible, by the way.
Yeah.
Cars is... I would say it's my guilty pleasure of Pixar.
I never bothered with it.
But, I mean,
so
Cars
2,
that was just a bad choice overall.
But Larry the Cable Guy
up,
in that?
Yeah.
Up,
that focused
Ratatouille.
On him. Ratatouille, I really
like. Ratatouille, I love. Up is amazing.
Up is phenomenal.
Yes.
I mean, and obviously, you have the classics, Toy Story, Bugs Life.
Which, apparently, they're milling around with a potential Toy Story 4, but
don't
it's one
touch
of those...
It.
It's one of those rumors that's probably going to fade out.
I still haven't seen Toy Story 3, but from what I understand, it wrapped up very well.
Yeah.
I still need to get to it, but I want to rewatch 2 first because I barely remember 2.
You don't need to.
You really don't need to. They do such a good job.
I'm a completist. I like to see the things leading up to it before I see it. But I was actually going to tell a somewhat unrelated story about Up. I watched Up very late, probably like a year ago. After it had been recommended to me by a bunch of people, and everyone had told me I would cry. And I was like, well, yeah, I probably will because I cry at everything. So if you're telling me I'm going to cry, I probably will. So, of course, I did. I sobbed at the after, you know, the montage near the beginning of the movie.
Everybody did. Everybody on the planet.
And then
I didn't.
I went online.
Not when it was cute, but it's just like, I understand where the story's going.
But. Yeah. I went online after watching the movie and somehow ended up linked to a news article about a little girl who was dying, and her last wish was to see the new Pixar movie. And this was right before Up came out. And Pixar actually brought a copy of the movie before it was released.
Like a screener.
Yeah. To her hospital room so that she could see it. But she was so sick, she couldn't keep her eyes open. So her mom actually described the movie to her as it was going on, and then she passed away that night. So of course I'm sobbing again, but I do really like the idea that Pixar is that kind of company that will do something like that, that will take that extra step.
Yeah, they're a family company.
And it also sounds like because of the subject matter of Up, it was really kind of cathartic for her family to watch that with her before she passed.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
But I'm just interested in this because I had read a description online of how it works, where they try to seamlessly include the description into the, like, between dialogue, so that if there is a short break, they will try to fill in as much of the picture as they can before, you know, jumping right back into the dialogue.
I would be extremely curious as to...
Yeah.
But at the same time, I won't watch it straight through, I have to be blindfolded, or else it just doesn't make any sense to do it.
True.
Well, and that may have been my problem when I tried to watch, like I said, Moulin Rouge on the DVD has a track for the visually impaired, and I was really intrigued by that, because that movie is so visual.
Oh, God, it's an acid trip.
I really love that movie, though. I still have a soft spot for it, but I kind of want to stop it like 5 minutes before it actually ends. But anyway.
Yeah.
I never got through it, but maybe that's the key, is that if I had been blindfolded or something, if I hadn't been looking at the screen, then maybe that would have made a difference and I could have really given it a chance to see, to hear what it would be like.
Make it more like a radio show.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. That's what got me really interested in it.
Kind of jumping back a bit, and we're going to go a little bit off topic here. But if you look, one of my favorite, you know, you always look at Facebook and photos pop up. It's like the new thing where they have photos and then captions and stuff like that. One of my favorite ones I've seen over the past year or so was saying that Up created a better love story in 15 minutes than Twilight did in 3 films.
Yep.
Saw that one.
I love that one. Yes.
Love it.
Oh, yes. Fantastic.
And now What's-Her-Name wants to have What's-His-Name's baby, so it just makes sense.
I did see a pretty funny thing on the internet recently that was very pro-Pixar and bashing DreamWorks, and basically it was like how the creative process works at Pixar versus DreamWorks. And
I saw this.
Like the top panel is Pixar, and it's like this guy, and he's like, oh, what if these toys come alive, and they're like having their own adventures on the side, and
it's very descriptive and very much like, and they learn this lesson,
I'm getting
and they
there.
Do this and that.
I'm getting
sorry.
There.
Okay, sorry.
Let me do my
description
here.
Okay, I'm sure.
And then they're like, oh, let's have a robot in the future, and the Earth is all polluted and stuff, and he's gonna fall in love with this other robot that's all new and new hotness and stuff, and then. the bottom panel DreamWorks, it's like, oh yeah, there are gonna be some animals that act like people and like objects that act like people, and they're all gonna make this face.
See, that's what I've seen. I've seen the DreamWorks always has this face.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
The raised eyebrow with like the smirk,
the
kind
quirk
of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Orca whales picking your plot line.
Did anybody else ever hear the story? And this may just be a myth.
The lunch? The Pixar lunch?
No.
Okay, I wasn't sure if
I was
going to
say
same branch.
It might be related to that. There is a story that there was a Pixar staff member who was in on the discussions of like the first five Pixar movies and then left and went to DreamWorks. And that's why the movies parallel so much, that there's Shark Tale and
Finding Nemo
and A Bug's Life and Ants. And like there's like four or five movies right in a row that parallel as far as the subject matter. And that's the rumor that I heard, is that it was a Pixar person who left and went to DreamWorks and kind of took the ideas with him, but changed them enough that there wouldn't be lawsuits or anything.
Huh.
Did not hear that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's true, but I've heard it.
Not from anyone other than
terrible.
You.
Terrible.
Oh.
What? Shark's Tale was terrible.
Oh, I never saw that one.
Will Smith can occasionally do wrong.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate. Which, by the way, like he dropped out into Django.
Huh? What?
Will Smith, that was offered to him, first or second?
He was first. He was offered first, and he originally accepted.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh, and then he had the conflict.
Yeah, and he had to drop out. And Jamie Foxx is not going to be as good as Will Smith would have been in the Django Unchained.
I thought there was a third person who was also offered the role.
I'm sure
same
was,
role.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of who it was. And
Jamie Foxx was like their last choice. They're like, all right, well, we need an African-American actor who
has a reasonable name to carry with
and some attitude.
I think Jamie Foxx isn't a bad actor. You're kind of underselling him a little bit.
No, I don't think he's a bad actor, but in that role. You know, I mean, every actor is built for a specific role, and he's kind of got that
sly. He's Ray
Charles. Yeah, you know, he was fantastic in that. And he was funny in Horrible Bosses, but I could not take him as the serious Quentin Tarantino, I'm going to get revenge on everybody role.
Hmm. Yeah, he doesn't really play like angry.
I don't really see Will Smith in that role either, though. When you describe it that way.
Well, I mean, did you see I Am Legend?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Because it showed a really good side of his dramatic.
Yep.
Yeah, because I'm used to seeing him in the more comic roles.
Or Six Degrees
really
of Separation is another really good, very serious
one.
Seven Pounds.
I haven't seen that one, but I know that's
fantastic.
Fair point. There's a long list of his movies I haven't seen then.
Yeah. But of course, everyone goes back to Independence Day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was thinking Independence Day, Men in Black.
I Am Robot.
Wild Wild West.
Oh, yes, please.
But in that
still
same
available
I never
on
saw
Netflix.
That, but I kind of want to.
In that same token of Will Smith displaying his ability to play the angry man in I Am Legend, what?
Are you thinking about Wiki Wawa right now?
I was thinking of one of the three episodes in South Park where they have the meteor shower, and Cartman is convinced he's Will Smith from Wild Wild West, and he keeps rapping, and he really doesn't have much of it, so it's just the wickety wah wah keeps showing up, and it's Artemis Frog instead of whatever Kevin Kline's character's name was.
Yeah,
it's just, it was just
Artemis Gordon.
Artemis Gordon, wow. And Selma Hayek.
Yeah, but
help me.
Anyway, before we got...
Adam looks like he wants to say something.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Right. So, just displaying Jamie Foxx's durability as an actor, there is this really great scene in Collateral.
Yep.
Where he...
I was going to say, that's the only serious movie he's really been in that's been a strong serious role. Which scene are you thinking of?
There's the scene where he has to take on the persona of the assassin...
Mm-hmm.
And he just like switches it on out of nowhere, and he becomes this very serious, dangerous character, and it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I just I look at it, and I just instantly what I think of, especially when I see the trailer. You know, he's got this like serious look to him, but he's used it in so many comedic roles that it's like it's hard to get past.
Right.
And like if you watch the trailer again, you know, go back to when they first show up and they're pulling him off the slave line. And they're basically like, you know, I'm looking for someone specific. They're going through asking for names. They ask his name, and he says Django, like really serious. But he's got like that one eyebrow raised, kind of, like squinting. But it's a very Jamie Foxx like comedic look. Like,
so it's like, one of those things where somebody will probably chop up the preview thereafter and make a comedic version of it because it'd be very versatile for it.
I guess maybe I haven't seen very many Jamie Foxx movies. I hear his name all the time, but I haven't actually seen.
I
don't picture him necessarily as that comedic, so I guess I haven't seen him in much.
I've only seen him in comedy. I've never seen him dramatic.
Collateral, I guess, would be the only serious role I've seen him in.
I just, offhand, can't actually think of anything.
Well, I mean, other
I've
than Ray, Ray is technically more bio.
Yeah. But he was in Horrible Bosses. He was in...
I haven't seen that one yet.
He was in Collateral. He was in Any Given Sunday. He played Willie Beeman.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I see what you're saying. Like, in this case, for this movie, it's kind of going to be more like Jamie Foxx playing Django instead of like it just being acceptable as this character.
We'll kind of see, though. You know, I have faith in Quentin. You know, Quentin really hasn't produced a film that I've looked at and been like, I mean, if you go into a Quentin film knowing that you're looking for a Quentin Tarantino film, you know, like you look at like Machete.
He has that style.
Yeah. You know, you look at like Machete or you look at like when he did his double feature. Yeah, you know.
Oh. But wasn't that technically...
yeah, but he was a producer. I mean, you could tell certain
things. Something, if he has a finger in that pot, then he's
got his feel.
Yeah.
That's the movie you guys were talking about on the podcast episode I was listening to when I pulled up. You were talking about Machete.
Oh, God. and they have greenlighted the sequel.
Oh, God.
Really?
Are you a Mexican or a Mexicant?
but switching gears to another notable stylistic director is I just dragged Emily to see Moonrise Kingdom.
I haven't seen it.
I've heard it's amazing.
Oh, it's really good. It is, I would say, second... Well, okay. Yeah. So I would put it at Life Aquatic, Royal Tenenbaums, Moonrise Kingdom.
Right, so it is Wes Anderson. Okay.
I don't enjoy his movies.
Really?
I really don't.
You don't like the 1970s science museum diorama?
You see, I did enjoy like Mystery Science Theater. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of got that aspect to it, that kind of awkwardness. But for whatever reason, you know, I watch Royal Tenenbaums or I watch Life Aquatic. I don't know. There's just, you know, it's kind of like when you watch the Coen brothers, like Burn After Reading.
Yes.
Like some people will name that like one of their top five favorite comedies ever. Then other people will, see it and be like, that was terrible.
I need to revisit Wes Anderson's like stuff because he's another one. There are so many movies I saw, you know, 5-8 years ago.
Right.
And didn't care for that much. But I'm such a different person than I was at that time. That, like, I saw Royal Tenenbaums, and I didn't think that much of it. It wasn't my style. Mm-hmm. But now it might be.
True.
Yeah. But I've heard Moonrise Kingdom is amazing.
It's totally worth the 94% it got on Rotten Tomatoes.
Random side note. Just to satisfy my own curiosity, I looked up Jamie Foxx on IMDb. And the only movie I have ever actually seen him in is The Truth About Cats and Dogs. I have not seen any of his other movies. I just hear his name all the time. And I knew he won an Oscar for Ray, right?
Yeah. He was phenomenal.
So I guess that's all I knew. But yeah, he's one of the like supporting characters in The Truth About Cats and Dogs, and that's the only thing I've actually ever seen him in.
Kind of like how Dave Chappelle was a supporting character in You've Got Mail.
Yeah. Yeah, like that.
I always enjoy just going and saying, "Hey, look, it's Dave Chappelle." Okay.
Or like Victor Garber's a supporting character in Sleepless in Seattle.
Oh.
What's another movie?
Random stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. There was another movie the other day I was watching. No, it was like it was a normal movie, and like he just popped up as a side character.
Oh, he just shows up all of a sudden. He was in Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Yeah.
That might have been it, actually.
Because he was a chew.
Yeah, yeah. That was definitely it. I was like, what is he doing in this film?
Oh, and what's his name was his dad? Chef.
Hello there, children.
Yeah, it's what's his name? It's... I can picture his face.
Interesting.
But yeah, that was his dad in... Oh, God. I remember waiting for that movie to come out on DVD because for like the longest time... Yes.
So funny.
Longest time, it's just like it was the one Mel Brooks movie that just didn't make it to the DVD scene. Like that and the original producers were just kind of underground versus everything else.
Yeah.
And now it's like $5.
Yeah.
You know, Men in Tights is one that I haven't seen for a really long time.
It's on ABC Family. It holds up. It's funny. All the time.
And it has that internet meme going around where it's, what, Hawkeye and the Chair from the Grave. Oh, yeah. And just all these archers, and then it's the
They're
cover.
They're like, I've got this. No, I got this. No, I got this.
I got this and four more.
Yeah. Yeah. Men in Tights and Spaceballs I bought in a 2-pack at Target for like $7.50, and it was so worth it.
That's solid.
Although they don't have many special features because they were in a 2-pack. So
yeah.
Someday, like, if there are special features available, I'll have to pick them up because...
I don't think... I did own Spaceballs at one point in time, and I don't recall it having much in the way of special features. I remember the menus were fun, but that's about it.
That's what I miss watching Netflix. That's what I miss now that I don't actually watch DVDs anymore, is that I love special features. I love listening to commentaries. I love behind-the-scenes featurettes.
Gag reels are my guilty pleasure.
Yeah, you don't get it on Netflix, and... That's the one thing that really makes me wish having that tangible or miss having that tangible DVD is the ability to watch something, love it, and then find out more about it.
True.
Like going back to Psych was my favorite show to watch the gag reel because everyone just had like, sure they had their character, but then it was just the person themselves would just do something really goofy. And I
love
every single one of those to the point where I bought the DVD seasons exclusively for the gag reel.
Okay. Scrubs had some pretty good gag reels, too.
I've seen some of those.
Yeah.
I could see it.
Oh, though.
Because Zach Braff just would go off on whatever. And it was funny. It was interesting watching the gag reels because you could hear the director in the background be like, come on, guys. Like, seriously, just do the scene.
Finish the show.
You could hear that he would get frustrated with them. Which made it slightly less funny to me, just because. Interesting. But
it's interesting because there's that aspect of once you hear that enough, you can get into that. I've been there. Come on, guys, let's get this thing done.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But one of the best things that's available on YouTube is you can find a lot of Whose Line Is It Anyway gag reels.
Ooh, that would be good.
Like there are hours of episodes. If you just type in Whose Line, there are playlists where they have full episodes, and you just burn through all of that, and then they have collections of best ofs, which just goes on and on. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, that's one of the favorite thing I love about my Blu-ray collection. You know, it's just the Blu-rays are just packed with stuff. It's like, I mean, the new Avengers film, for instance, the Avengers pack for Blu-ray is the disc, which is one Blu-ray, and then five making of special features, bloopers, discs.
When's that coming out?
Blu-rays, September, I think.
Okay, Avengers might have to be my first Blu-ray purchase. I now own a Blu-ray player because it was given to me for Christmas, but I don't own any Blu-rays.
Oh, there's some.
I don't own any discs. So, and I keep thinking that my first Blu-ray purchase should be something like I really love and really worth it. And Avengers would be totally worth it.
I do like the Marvel Blu-ray set that was premiered at Comic-Con.
All of them?
Yes.
I see, I already own so many of them. It's like...
Exactly. It's one of those things where it's not worth it if you already have bits of the collection. Though you could easily go to like Cheapo or something and get some money out of that and then get the satchel or whatever you want to call it.
You know they're going to come out with a half dozen more and then release another new box set too.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'll buy Avengers. The last big purchase I bought was the Harry Potter series.
I should do that. That's one of the few series I love. I only own like one of the movies. It would totally be worth it to buy
the set. I bought it on Black Friday. I got the entire series on Blu-ray for $50.
What? I found it online.
Oh my gosh.
Outside of Black Friday, they have it at some places for $50 or less.
Oh, I'll have to look into
that.
You
can get it for like $40 or $45 because I got that for Emily for Christmas.
Okay.
Was the entire set on Blu-ray.
And if you keep your eyes open, I buy all my Blu-rays on Amazon. I'll hardly ever, unless I like really want something right then or I'm craving something. Like I bought Safe House, which, by the way, isn't a great Blu-ray. I mean, pretty decent movie. Not a great Blu-ray, but I was just looking for something to watch. I bought it on Blu-ray at Target. But most of my Blu-rays I buy online and Amazon, and it's like if you wait enough time and you know what you're looking for, you can usually find it for super cheap.
Okay. Right.
Just bought the entire series, the British version of Planet Earth.
Oh, right.
Oh, man.
Okay.
$29.99 for six discs.
Whoa.
Wow.
So, and plus...
You're gonna want the Blu-rays. You want to upgrade those.
At the same time, they also have that great delivery setup where you can have something delivered to you on the same day that it's released.
Truth.
Where I picked up the new Muppet movie, and they had it's like the Waka Waka pack or whatever they called it, where it was the standard def, the high def, soundtrack, and like something. It's just this huge collection, and I got it the day that the movie came out. So everyone's like, "Oh, waited in line for, or went to make sure I picked up a copy." He's like, "Yeah, mine's at home. It's waiting for me."
Yeah, it's awesome.
That's another one I'll have to pick up. Yeah, I was browsing at Target the other day when I was waiting for my prescription, and they had like a buy two get one free deal on a bunch of Blu-rays, and I was like, "Oh, maybe I'll buy some Blu-rays." And there was only like one movie out of the bunch I kind of wanted to own.
Right.
So. That's it just wasn't worth it. Yeah. I browsed the DVD shelves or the Blu-ray shelves. I thought about getting Serenity.
I didn't feel like
shelling out $20
I have dropped nearly thousands of dollars on Blu-rays throughout my...
I don't have the money right now to
Well, basically what I do is I buy one a week, usually.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
So I try to find, you know, I'll go online, I'll try to find a good deal on something, or if it's something new that a new's getting released, I'll get it day of. But if you think about it that way, I mean, it's max probably $30 a week.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, just to add to my collection. And over time now I have this huge collection. But what I can say is...
You're like on a payment plan for your for my awesome Blu-ray collection.
Exactly. See, I'm on welfare.
I also, unfortunately, don't really have a TV that will do Blu-ray justice either. My Blu-ray player is currently connected to the TV/VCR/DVD player we bought when I went to college.
Oofed.
So, and I'm older than, I think, all of you. So, yeah, that's like 10 years old now.
Yeah, I'm the second oldest person here, and I can figure it.
Yeah. So I'm in college. My TV is old. But I think when I move, we'll probably connect my Blu-ray to Jem's TV, and I think he's got an much nicer, larger TV than I have.
I mean, my setup right now, I have a 50-inch Vizio attached to, and it's a 1080i, attached to a Vizio soundbar with a wireless subwoofer, and then the Blu-ray, the Xbox, all that kind of runs through it.
I mean, I need to switch from my surround to
We should all watch movies at your place.
That's pretty cool.
My downstairs, actually, because I live in a basement, actually, when you turn off the lights and you turn everything on, it is a movie theater. And that's awesome. I've dropped a lot of money into that to make it that way because I'm, you know, obviously I spend so much time there because I'm a huge gamer nerd.
Though I remember when I first got the like the surround sound and everything, the first Blu-ray movie I watched was Iron Man. I remember like the first explosion shook my room to no end. It's like, okay, I made the right choice here.
Yeah, they're phenomenal. But jumping back, what I was going to say was, based on all my knowledge, going back and buying Blu-ray movies of movies that were refurbished is not worth your money because they really can't add a whole lot when they go back. I mean, you know, like one that I bought, not recently, but was like Man on Fire. Like it's extremely, extremely, the difference between my DVD version of Man on Fire and my Blu-ray Man on Fire is minimal.
Because I assume that you're the... DVD Blu-ray player, you have upscales as well. The DVD. So it's like the same thing.
It's the exact same thing. So if you're if you're at Target and you see like the super cheap $5 Blu-rays, a lot of times are the really old ones.
Okay.
Like I've seen, I picked up Fifth Element because it's one of my favorite movies.
Yep.
But there are a lot of times where they'll have the graphics and you can see the graphic box outside of the ship as it's traveling through space. Like, oh, look, there's the object as it animated across the plane.
Yeah.
Oh, I actually heard, that reminds me, I heard something interesting the other day about the new Hobbit movie.
Oh, because it's a 48 frames per second.
Yeah, and what I heard about that is that when they premiered it at Comic-Con... It did not play well.
No,
because
didn't they not show that one?
What I had heard, and I can't remember now where I heard it, so take it with a grain of salt. Someone told me this, but someone said that they had premiered that at Comic-Con with the super high resolution, and that no one liked it because it made it look like people in costumes on a set. Because what we're used to as movies is very kind of glossy and fixed up. And that made it look very realistic. They said it made it look kind of like a BBC show where you can, it looks like just people and sets.
Oh,
and
sure.
So they're actually talking about they might have to go back and redo it on a lower resolution or
bump a lower
frame rate.
Bump it back down
so
to 30
that it looks
FPS,
more like a movie to the audiences that are going out to see it.
See, I heard they had the exact opposite, where they showed a non 48 frame per second version, and it went over well. So maybe they juxtaposed them as they did show one with and one without.
Maybe.
And they probably gave more press to the successful versus the
blunder. That would
make
a lot of sense, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Huh. Well, yeah, I mean, standard for film is 30 frames per second. And
unless you're in some crazy, weird European country, then it's 25 point something.
Something like that. But yeah, and that's kind of something that's come up when people buy movies and watch them at home, too, because there you're getting a much higher refresh rate. The frame rate is much higher. So a lot of people, the pace of the movie seems different because you're seeing more frames, so it looks sped up somehow when you compare it
to... Right. That is always what's weird when they upscale DVDs. It's just like, wow, everyone's moving like... Everyone's really energetic in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that.
I mean, another...
But you're still seeing more details, so I think it's just something that people have to get used to. And it does look better when you can accept it and
yeah. Well, I think in the case of something like a fantasy movie, I could see where it could be a problem. Like, I could see where it could be very distracting if a fantasy movie
is too realistic.
Too realistic.
I mean, that's the biggest problem
because,
that I hear.
Yeah, exactly.
It's too real that it looks fake.
Yeah, well, and from what I heard, like, you could see the stitching on Gandalf's costume. And, like, the sets, the Hobbit sets looked like sets. Didn't look like a fantasy place that they were. They looked like sets.
Well, damn it, Peter Jackson.
Which would be really distracting.
Me.
Yeah.
Luckily, the previews, when I saw, they had the preview for the movie in front of Moonrise Kingdom.
They had it before Brave, too.
And it was, it looked really interesting. And it was really stereotypical Peter Jackson, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Panning shot really close, lots of. Yeah.
That's what I
objects.
Want.
Yeah, actually, when that came on before Brave, Jem and I like clutched each other's hands. We're like, "Yes, Hobbit!" Because of course it just has like the titles and it plays that da 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 from Lord of the Rings, and we're like, oh, "Yes!" And the song that they did for the dwarves is awesome. Was that in the preview?
It was.
It sounds so good. I'm really excited about that.
Is he doing that one as a two-parter or
two-parter?
It's a two-part.
Two-parter. Yeah. Although I saw an article title something about he wanted to add more and make it a three-parter. But this was just a title of an article that I saw. So
no, I mean, before the studio, I do know actually a lot of, I'm a huge nerd when it comes to that. But like before the studio even accepted the deal, they wanted the scripts for both of them done. And so he had to write two separate films. But that's why I feel like if you know the book and you know the storyline, the first film is going to feel so anticlimactic.
Oh,
yeah. Because it's going to be so storyline. And you think about everything that happens in the back end of that story with the dragon, with
it's
the town,
so
and with the escape,
half.
And with Gollum. Oh. Like, the movie, I guarantee the first movie is going to end with Bilbo in the cave with Gollum, and he just finds the ring. And
well,
that's
which
cut.
Was
what
in the preview.
I wonder is if they might play around with... Well, I suppose it's a lot harder to do because they're all together in that, aren't they? I was going to say maybe they'll play around with the timing of the events a little bit, like they did at the end of Two Towers, to make that more exciting.
Yeah.
But I suppose that would be a lot harder to do because you don't have separate groups of people in different locations.
Yeah, they're
all
together. They're on one journey.
So unless there was... They could somehow do... some sort of flashbacks or something.
I'm sure they will because I did hear something about them jumping around like that and giving a little bit more history around Middle Earth and relating back to Lord of the Rings.
Well, now, but, what is the release date again for that? Do we know? I
December
don't remember.
Yeah, December.
It is December. Okay.
Mid.
Yeah, and but that kind of makes me nervous that they had to approve the scripts beforehand because. I think one of the things that made Lord of the Rings itself so cool is because while they were on set, it was very much a collaborative process where the ensemble was there and involved and they would make like changes to the script on the fly.
Well, I'm sure they do a lot of that. I mean, it's still Peter Jackson at the end of the day. It's not some no-name director.
Yeah, it's just they wanted to have at least
to know his direction
mostly done kind of thing because everybody ad-libs on set eventually.
Sure.
So it's never going to be. The same script from beginning to end.
Right.
No. Yeah.
But yeah, there is that collaborative effort that really comes out in his movies.
But I mean,
yeah.
he's an A-list director, and he's to the point now where, you know, it's almost like Christopher Nolan. Like, Christopher Nolan comes in with an idea.
Yes, here is like a big pile of money.
I'm gonna make a movie about dreams within dreams, and it's gonna start Leonardo DiCaprio. All right, how much do you need? You know, like,
here's our checkbook. Yeah, have right. fun.
And you know, and he's just to that point, so he can play around with it and mess around with it and make it his, which he will definitely do.
Yeah, I'm very excited. That's probably my most anticipated movie release of the year. That even surpasses Dark Knight Rises for me. Ooh. I'm looking forward to Dark Knight Rises, but I think I'm looking forward to Hobbit more. And Avengers I loved, but wasn't even on my radar ahead of time because I actually still haven't seen Captain America or The Incredible Hulk.
I think
I saw Iron Man after I saw The Avengers. The only one I actually had seen before The Avengers
the first
was
or second.
Thor, which I still haven't seen the second
well,
one.
Having
Luckily,
seen Thor,
having seen Thor set me up really well, and
that's
I
tough.
And people had kind of told me how Captain America ended, so I kind of got what was going on there. But yeah, so Avengers wasn't even really on my radar. I kind of just went because it was Joss Whedon and because my friends wanted to go, and ended up loving it. But yeah, Hobbit is...
Yeah.
It for me this summer,
I would say,
or this year.
I would say Dark Knight is definitely number one. I mean, it's a movie I've been looking forward to for over 12 months, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Ever since they were like, we're doing this, it's like, all right, mark that one down on the calendar.
I mean,
you know, and then I would say Avengers, you know, was definitely right behind that. And that even as high, and here's my problem right now, is I feel like the Dark Knight, I'm building up so high in my head that it's going to be tough to get over it.
Well, all the reviews just came out for it. So
and they say it's phenomenal.
It's phenomenal, and a lot of them say it's really great, but kind of complicated.
Yeah, and I'm fine with it. I mean, that's just Christopher Nolan, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
that's what he's good at.
I mean, I had the
After
same...
After Inception, I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready for complicated.
Yeah, right? But you know, I
haven't seen Inception yet.
Oh, well, you should.
Man. I know. I should see that on Blu-ray.
Going into Inception for a second, I woke up one day and Inception, the soundtrack was on my computer, and I still haven't figured out how it got there.
It's fantastic.
It just showed up one day in full. It's like...
You're welcome.
Hans Zimmer, thank you.
Bum, bum,
it's just like, bum, what the fuck? Because I have no recollection of ever like seeking it out. I understood that it's Hans Zimmer
and
a Christopher Nolan film, and so it all would work well together. But it's just like, I wouldn't buy a soundtrack.
That movie, when I saw it, actually, I left the movie not only being like, this is a great movie, but I was like, that's one of the best soundtracks I've ever heard for a cinema.
Yeah.
But going back, Avengers was the movie that I hyped up so far in my head, and it passed it.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was way better than what I was even expecting in my head, which I was so worried that it wouldn't meet it. And I fear that The Dark Knight won't do that for me. Because the thing that surprised me about Avengers that I didn't see coming, and I should have because it was a Whedon movie, I had seen Cabin in the Woods a week earlier. Which,
still
if you
haven't
seen that? Oh, my. Have you guys seen it?
I know of it, but it's not of my genre. And
here's the thing.
Do you know what genre it is?
It's spoof primarily, isn't it?
It's a comedy.
It's a comedy, but. I don't do well with any sort of horror. Like, I have minimal
interest.
I don't either. And everybody I've told that to has said, yeah, but that's not really what this is.
That's
like,
not
there
what
are
it
horror
is at all.
Elements, but it's not really what it is.
The scariest part of the movie is the title screen.
Yeah. I have been told that I would love Cabin in the Woods, even though I hate horror.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, because people told me that and I didn't believe them, I listened to some of my podcasts that include spoilers. So I know what happens.
Yeah.
I know how it all goes down.
It's fantastic.
And I really do want to see it, especially because some of the actors in the later part of the stuff that goes down, I love from other things, and I would love to see them interact.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's also still horror, so I need to go with someone whose arm I can grip onto.
Yeah.
And my boyfriend doesn't want to see it, so I have to drag some of my girlfriends to it sometime before I move.
It's not even like something, whether or not it's scary, it's just that, like, I remember seeing Hostel when it first came out.
Yeah.
A couple of things, and I was just sitting there, like,
I hated that movie.
And then somebody else is going to get hurt. It's just like, sitting there, I just don't care.
I understand that it's not really like that.
Yeah, because it's a Whedon.
It's Whedon, and
it's so self-aware. Kind of like if you look at Avengers, you know, you look at the Hulk character. Like, the Hulk character is so self-aware in the Avengers movie.
Right.
That's how the entire movie in Cabin in the Woods is. Yeah. So, like, there's a scene where they're all sitting in the cabin and you know, they're basically the main leader jock guys, like, you know, we should split up, like, we should go over here. And there's just the one stoner in the back that just kind of, like, looks around and is just like, really? Like, that's a terrible idea, you know? And it's that kind of humor.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, it's just very self-aware of the fact that it's a horror movie, you know? And then...
And I hear it kind of subverts things, too. Like, there's a couple... There's a specific scene I'm thinking of that involves a painting or something, or something that on one side is a mirror and on the other side someone can see through, and it kind of subverts what would usually happen in that situation in one of these movies.
Yeah, it does. It's just so,
I'm intrigued by it. I'm gonna go see it eventually. I just haven't caught up with it yet.
Back to The Dark Knight Rises, though. I did see an 8-minute preview of
hilarious.
Our producer is laughing about something, but anyway. I did see an 8-minute preview of The Dark Knight before some
Ghost Protocol.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the sound quality was terrible because they didn't master it yet and you couldn't hear Bane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And did you go down to the zoo?
I knew people who went to Ghost Protocol
Did you go down to the zoo?
Preview.
No, I actually saw Ghost Protocol over in LA because I was there during that time. But it looked amazing.
They didn't master. I mean, and Christopher Nolan came out and said, you know, it wasn't his idea. The studio wanted to do it because they did it last year. And, you know, first of all, kind of side note, Ghost Protocol was way better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I hear. I didn't see it. But
owning a Blu-ray, it's a fantastic Blu-ray. Anything. Add that one to your list. So you watch it, and yeah, the sound wasn't mastered yet. So the entire thing, like, you bet you couldn't understand half the words because you couldn't understand Bane.
Yeah, it was very muddled.
Yeah, and then they figured it out, and like you can tell in the new trailers, you know, apparently he sounds crisp. And I know people, you know, I've read like reviews of people who have seen the pre screenings or whatever, and they say that you can understand him just fine.
Cool.
It's good that Ghost Protocol was good, though, because I know a lot of people who went to Ghost Protocol just to see the 8-minute preview.
That was us.
Of The Dark Knight.
and we
like
went to the casino.
Given that the sound quality wasn't good on the preview, I feel like people would have been bitching a lot more about it afterwards had Ghost Protocol not been good.
Yeah, I mean, we went and we kind of joked that Ghost Protocol ended up being better than the previewed was for us.
Yeah. Although, I mean, you can't argue with what they did in that preview.
It's fantastic. Oh. And if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend go on YouTube and check it out. But then we saw, and we were down seeing Ghost Protocol at the zoo down at IMAX, which is like the way to see movies.
Right.
Absolutely.
I saw The Dark Knight there the second time I saw it. The first time I saw it was in a regular theater. Then I went to see it in IMAX. And then I went back to see it in the regular theater again and dragged a friend of mine to it that hadn't seen it yet.
Yeah, so. you really have to kind of flex your ears a little bit because after being on for so long, it's just like, oh.
That's what freedom feels like.
They stretch.
Curtis Unchained.
Yes. Well, I was still working at a movie theater when The Dark Knight came out, so I got to see it the night before.
Oh, midnight.
Dog
you.
Yeah. It was a midnight for me.
It was so good.
I didn't want to see it, actually. I kind of got dragged to it by a friend because Batman Begins, I thought was okay. I didn't love it.
I agree.
And actually, I still keep wanting to go back and watch it again, but every time I try, I just can't get into it.
It'll be depressing.
It really is just as okay as you think it is.
Yeah. But a friend of mine, actually, Bill, was like, come see Dark Knight with me. And I was like, okay. Mm. And actually, I was terrified during a lot of it, but I really loved it.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I was speechless after I saw that movie.
Yeah.
I loved it that much.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of the movies that I first of all, Heath Ledger, you can't even...
Yeah.
Right.
His performance is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the movie in itself is just everything from the script to the way Nolan directed it to the darkness of it, the balance of, you know, how it still stays true to what it actually is.
The special effects in there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it turned out to be a phenomenal movie, which is something I think that The Dark Knight Rises is really going to have. You know, because if you look at the actual comic book, you know, basically the storyline with Bane is that Bane breaks his back and then runs Gotham while he's gone. You know, and Batman kind of sends some fake Batman to kind of like take care of business while he recovers. And I actually think, based on some of the previews, is that is what actually
it looks a
happens.
Lot like that. Yeah,
oh, yeah.
I think it's back. I think they're actually going to have it where Bane picks him up above him and breaks his back. Mm. Which is a very famous Batman scene, you know, because he's sitting there, he's holding it, and it's black, and then... Cause,
it's also very, very dark. It's a very dark, risky place to go in that kind of blockbuster movie.
But I think that's how they're going to go with
it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm not saying that they won't. If anyone's going to do it, it'll be Nolan. But yeah. I mean, it was a dark, risky place to go in Dark Knight.
Yeah.
With the way, you know, everything went with the explosion and I mean, everything in that movie. There was a lot of stuff in that movie that was a risky way to go for a summer blockbuster.
Yeah. And I think that with that preamble, I mean, this is... I mean, he can do
whatever he wants. Yeah, true. Yeah, for sure.
But so. Yeah, I mean, like when you watch the trailer, there's the scene of him like laying there, and he's like, you know, why didn't you just kill me? And he goes, you know, you have permission to die when Gotham is buried or something like that.
And they keep flaunting that picture of the broken Batman mask.
And then they, you know, and then there's the whole, you know, they're all in Gotham and wondering when Batman's going to come back and how they shouldn't be messing with Bane.
Somebody asks Joseph Gordon-Levitt, do you think he'll ever come back?
Yeah.
I don't think I've actually seen a preview. Now that you're talking about all that, I remember none of this. I don't think I've ever seen a preview for it.
But you know what I mean?
Which I'm okay with not seeing a preview, actually. It's close enough to the release. I'd rather just see the movie. But
Yeah.
But I think that that's honestly the direction they're going to go. And if that is, I mean, you're gonna please everyone from the avid comic book fans who normally criticize these movies heavily because they're like, they're not true to the comic book.
Yeah.
All the way to the avid, you know, just the regular moviegoer who's going with their parents, you know, or with their significant other or whatever, you know, because it's their a Christopher Nolan film.
Yes.
It was really funny, actually, at the midnight premiere of Avengers... we had the hipster Avenger squad was in my theater.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And it consisted of a black Captain America, gay Thor, lazy Hulk, and Asian Iron Man. And they all were dressed up head to toe.
Huh.
And it was so funny. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And like, you know, they went in the front and like were taking photos the entire time, but it was definitely worth it.
Cool. There's
some people yelling.
Gotta love that ambiance.
I was like, what is going on? Did Katie's ambience. Computer turn on again?
Mm-hmm.
Producer Katie looks sleepy.
Yeah. I think this is probably one of the better post-episode conversations we had, but I think we may have to cut it off soon.
I understand.
For sake of time.
Let's call it a wrap.
I have to pack to drive to go to Fargo tomorrow because I'm going straight from rehearsal. So.
Yeah, then that would probably be a good thing to do.
Yeah, I should probably go home.
Well, thank you everybody for listening to the bonus track and join us for week for episode 44.
Hooray!
Yay!
Yay!
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Huzzah.
Huzzah indeed.
Headphones after more than an hour.
Huzzah. Yeah.